Welcome to Total Retail Talks, your podcast channel for retail knowledge.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Total Retail Talks. I'm Joe Keenan, Editor-in-Chief of Total Retail. I am joined on today's episode by Ali Mize, who is the Director of ESG, Belonging, and Corporate Philanthropy at Neiman Marcus Group. Ali and I will be discussing NMG's sustainability efforts, including the release of its first ever ESG report, along with some of its future goals in this area. So thank you for joining me today, Ali.
I'm excited to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So as I noted, Neiman Marcus Group recently released its first ever ESG report. So just to kind of give an idea for our audience, tell us a little bit about kind of the impetus for producing that report.
Sure. I think our heritage, over 115 years of impact, is one of the largest differentiators between Neiman Marcus Group and other multi-brand luxury retailers today. So that was definitely part of the impetus. In 1907, Carrie Marcus Neiman founded Neiman Marcus's retail establishment in Dallas with her brother, Herbert Marcus, and her husband, Al Neiman, 13 years, Joe, before women had the right to vote. And so her nephew Stanley introduced the South to new people and ideas as well, and championing social justice along the way when he took the reins. And you still feel the family's legacy within our company today. But what's new about our efforts as we produce this first report is really our intention to add rigor around the way that we track the impact and the KPIs of those social and environmental efforts, the way we build them into our business's core risk and strategy processes, and then the way we publicly disclose those results for our investors and other stakeholders. And so in that sense, the impetus for the report came from our board of directors' partnership with management following Neiman Marcus Group's restructuring in 2020. And so back in fall of 2020, our new owners, several of whom are signatories to something called the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investment, brought a really strong vision and commitment to helping the company invest in ESG and make it a central part of its growth and transformation strategies. And so since then, we've been working diligently on our ESG strategy. And today, it's one of the five pillars of our new NMG Way culture, which includes values around growth mindset, values, the NMG way of working, or flexibility, belonging, and environmental social governance, which is what we're talking about today.
That's provides a really great backdrop for the conversation we're going to have today, Ali. So when this decision is made, okay, we want to produce this ESG report. We want to update not only shareholders, but the consumers and employees as well to what we're doing in these important areas of environmental and social governance. Talk a little bit about kind of taking on that task and who then takes the ball and kind of runs with it, and the teams that are involved. I'm imagining there was multiple, groups collaborating within the organization in terms of producing this report.
Absolutely. Producing a report like this takes a lot of cross-functional collaboration and consultation. And so we began our journey in March 2021 by collaborating with independent third-party consultants to conduct what's called a materiality assessment. This process involved conducting desktop research and engaging key internal and external stakeholders, everyone from associates, customers, investors, the brand partners, trade associations we're a part of, and nonprofits that we partner with, to really identify and prioritize the company's most significant ESG-related risks and opportunities. Once we had those results, we worked with the appropriate teams across the business, such as supply chain, store operations, people services, legal, IT, and others, to really identify, improve, and disclose our performance on each of those material ESG issues that came up in the assessment, whether it was climate change, human rights, et cetera. So we really used the results from that materiality assessment to develop the 2025 ESG strategy and goals that you see highlighted in the report. And so in the day-to-day, the ESG team that I lead oversees the production of the report But we rely heavily on these cross-functional VPs and SVPs across the entire enterprise to drive the programs and data that you're going to read about within it. So these leaders serve on something called our ESG Steering Committee, which meets on a monthly basis and help to oversee the report's copy and design. Then on a quarterly basis, we also share the progress with our Board of Directors Audit Committee, which has formal oversight for this work at the highest levels of our organization. So in sum, it's just a highly cross-functional process with weekly, monthly, and quarterly check-ins built into various levels of leadership throughout the company to make sure that this is truly reflective of the most impactful social and environmental issues facing our business today.
So as you notice, obviously a lot of work goes into producing such a report over, you know, about a year's worth of work. My follow-up to that, Allie, is one, will this be common annual or maybe a biannual type thing for Neiman Marcus Group in terms of producing this report? And also for this year's report, tell us a little bit about, you know, the report is finished. How do you distribute it and get it out there?
Yeah, it's a great question, Joe. So this year's report was distributed in tandem with our Q2 earnings because we really think it's important that ESG is not considered as something separate from the business. Our goal as we start this program, and we're still really on in this journey, is to move toward integrated reporting, right? Where financial and non-financial disclosures are considered in tandem because a lot of the social and environmental issues we report on have critical impacts inside and outside our business. And we know that. So we released it in tandem with Q2 earnings, and we do hope to make this an annual thing. So we may shift the quarter in which we report and get closer to our end of year reporting, but we continue to do it on an annual basis.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about specifically some of the good stuff contained within this year's report, some of the highlights that you would want to share with the audience.
Sure. I'm truly proud of the governance framework that helped produce the report. I know that's a little bit nerdy, but it includes board oversight, integration of key business processes, significant capital and operating investments, and a lot of alignment with external frameworks from the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, Global Reporting Initiative, Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. And these sound like wonky terms, but what I hope that rigorous governance did was provide investors with comparable and decision useful information about our company's ESG performance and really help give them the same confidence in the strength of our company that our owners today have. But beyond the governance piece, I think we've outlined some really ambitious goals and stellar performance in areas like climate change, the circular economy, workplace equity, and workforce diversity. So some of the goals that you'll see us outline in the report are reducing our scope 1 and 2 emissions 50% by 2025 and moving on to procure 100% renewable energy by 2030. And we're making some really quick wins in this space. We already have renewable energy in about 9 facilities with about 6 more coming on by summer and another 13 coming on next year. And we've joined the RE100 initiative, which is a coalition of major companies seeking to procure renewable energy across the world that really helps put them in touch with policymakers to drive down the cost and scale the affordability of renewable energy across the U.S. and other locations. I'm also really proud of what we've done in circularity. You know, circularity has always been a part of Neiman Marcus's operations just because of the intimate relationships that we develop with our customers and their closets. When someone needs something mended or altered, that's always been a service that we've provided just because it was the right thing to do for the luxury customer relationship. But now we've started to track it more intentionally and make strategic investments. In 2019, you saw us make a minority acquisition in Fashion File, which is our resale platform. And so one of the goals outlined in the report is helping our customers extend the useful life of 1 million luxury items through circular services, such as the garment mending and alterations, shoe and handbag restoration, resale with Fashion File, and clothing donation with Give Back Box. And we're really proud of how we're decoupling revenue growth from the sale of exclusively new products in this way, right? We're giving customers the opportunity to keep the luxury items they buy with us for longer and take better care of them. And we're driving revenue from these services. And so I'm really excited about our work in the circular economy. And when it comes to the more social side of the report, I think the two areas I'm most excited about are workplace equity and workforce diversity. So when it comes to workplace equity, we're seeking to hold ourselves to performance standards that are in line with prominent external frameworks like the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index or Bloomberg's Gender Equality Index. We feel like these are really standardized and best practice ways to make sure we're a great place to work for LGBTQ associates and women in particular, since we know that we over-index in those population of associates. And so in 2021, we completed the Human Rights Campaign's Foundation's Corporate Equality Index for the first time, and we received a top score on our first year in the index. We adopted really innovative benefits for our associates, offered the same type of healthcare coverage for same-sex domestic partner spouses and spouses. And we offered transition-related care for any transgender associates that wanted to transition during their time at Neiman Marcus Group. So we were really proud of that as one of the few companies that's led by an openly gay CEO. And then when it comes to women, we disclosed that we're about to start participating in Bloomberg's Gender Equality Index, and we're taking some of the steps that are going to help us perform well on that, such as performing our first pay equity study and announcing a new set of parental and caregiver leave benefits that will provide up to 16 weeks of paid parental leave for men and women who work at Neiman Marcus Group, and we're really proud of that.
Yeah, and we're going to address some of these benefits and specifically how this report speaks to some of the employee equity, one around social, around equity and also diversity of the employee experience as well at Neiman Marcus Group. But I wanted to talk first about, you know, you highlighted some of the great work that Neiman Marcus Group has already done, but also some of the goals that you've set going forward. And obviously with those goals, there are implications for the business across many different segments of it, you know, from, you know, operations and hiring and staffing. So tell us a little bit about, you know, with those goals in mind, particularly some of the goals you've set for 2025, the implications of the data for Neiman Marcus Group's business and how you can prepare to hopefully meet those goals and even in some cases potentially exceed them.
Sure. I think there are three main implications in my mind. The first part is all about de-risking our operations against major issues like climate change. The second implication is obviously increasing revenue from sustainable products and services. We know that's a growing category of our business and interest to our customers. And lastly, it's all about positioning Neiman Marcus Group as a retailer of choice for associates, customers, and our investors. And so I really think those are the three main implications of these goals and these efforts for our business. But if I take a topic like climate change, for instance, in 2021, severe weather conditions forced our stores to close for an aggregated total equivalent of 49 days, which we estimated in the report reduced sales by between $7 to $9 million. And we also had several major brand partners like Prada ask if we use renewable energy in stores where they lease spaces, because we know that when we use renewable energy in stores, that helps groups like Prada achieve their own carbon reduction goals. And so our new climate change strategy and efforts that we've included in the report really enable a resilient business strategy under a variety of different climate-related scenarios that we may see in the future. So for instance, in a 2 degrees Celsius or lower scenario, there would be limited stress on our current business strategy, because while the company may face some of the same physical risks we see from severe weather patterns today, our commitments to advance sustainable products and services and source 100% renewable energy by 2030 would align with consumer expectations and government commitments, allowing us to avoid some of those reputational risks and large expenses from carbon taxes and regulatory penalties that may apply. So in that way, you can really start to see how our efforts to address climate change are de-risking our operations. But it's not all about risk, it's also about opportunity. So I'm really excited about the implications this report has for increasing our revenue from sustainable products and services. because you can't fight climate change when current business models in retail rely on new product sales to grow. So moving forward, luxury retailers like Neiman Marcus Group are going to have to increase revenue from products that are made from regenerative bio-based materials, as well as circular services like the kind that I've highlighted for you earlier. And so these aren't just, you know, good for the environment, they're truly good for business. We're going to be tracking the revenue coming from these new categories of products and services. And I'm really excited about that. But the last piece is really about the implications of positioning Neiman Marcus Group as a retailer of choice for associates, customers, and investors. And I'm really proud of the confidence that this report has given to all of those key stakeholders as we navigate our transformation coming out of restructuring.
That's a perfect segue into my next question, Allie, in terms of, you mentioned kind of those two key cohorts, the customer and also the employee, and what impact these environmental and social governance initiatives and goals are going to have on their experiences and their associations with Neiman Marcus Group. So one, could you maybe first touch on how the release of this report and the data contained in it within it might impact employee acquisition and retention efforts at Neiman Marcus Group? And then second, to that, how about from a customer standpoint as well? What impact do you think you'll see from consumers?
Sure. I mean, Joe, we know in retail there's a war for top talent, and people want to work somewhere whose culture aligns with their values. And with all of this ESG work we've been doing in recent years and the amazing NMG Way culture that we've instituted, our retention rate has improved 20% and our time to hire rate has improved another 32% since fiscal year 2019. So we're hiring an average of 22 days faster than we did 3 years ago today. So we really see it in both the acquisition of talent and the retention. And this is largely due to that NMG Way culture that our Chief People and Belonging Officer, Eric Severson, has brought to the company. Belonging is now an essential component of our NMG Way culture. And it's really a belief in a practice of leading with love as we create an environment where everyone can thrive. This includes our efforts to increase workforce diversity, advance workplace equity, and champion marketplace inclusion. And I think you see great results from that between the report and all of the efforts contained within it. We've really been able to attract an amazing pool of top talent. And today, NMG considers itself a female-founded, female-majority organization that outpaces the U.S. population in terms of racial diversity, particularly in Asian American talent. And we boast one of corporate America's few openly gay CEOs. So I think that we're winning the war for top talent, and our ESG and belonging efforts are a key piece of that employer branding strategy. If I think about what it means for the customer, I think we're seeing this reflected in Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf Goodman's strong sales, right? Our loyal customers are staying with us because they're proud to be a customer associated with a retailer that's making these efforts. But I think we're also turning a few heads and also acquiring some of those newer, younger, more conscious consumers who are interested in this work, because I will tell you, this is not your, you know, grandmother's Neiman Marcus. This is a new Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf Goodman brand. And we still have the same elevated luxury feel that we did back then, but we're making sure that we're keeping current and acting on the business issues that are really important to consumers today.
So you've already done a lot of hard work and made a lot of positive progress in this area. But as you know, there's more work to be done. Goals have been set. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Neiman Marcus Group to hold yourself accountable for the ESG goals that you've already announced. Tell us a little bit about kind of the measurement and kind of the accountability piece there.
Sure. We talked a little bit about this when you asked about my favorite parts of the report. But as we move forward, it's really important to note that Neiman Marcus Group aims to treat our ESG data with the same rigor and control that we use for our financials. And so that includes referring to widely used ESG reporting frameworks like SASB, GRI, and TCFD, and having different teams and processes in place to review progress against these standardized frameworks and KPIs, and also identify new risks and opportunities as they arise. So as I mentioned before, our governance model is really composed of a core team that meets weekly to address these issues, an ESG steering committee that meets monthly and is composed of VPs and SVPs across the entire enterprise, and then issues that come up in ESG SteerCo and need to be elevated, go to our audit committee on a quarterly basis. And so it's truly built into the company's enterprise risk management systems, but also our strategy and target setting processes. And we're really making sure to hold ourselves accountable also through the hiring of functional experts throughout the business. So over the past year, we've created a variety of new ESG roles that sit inside of the business's different pyramids. So instead of growing our centralized teams, we're actually placing change makers directly under each of our business leaders so that they can influence the strategy and operations from directly inside of the business instead of a centralized ESG team telling the rest of the leaders what to do. So some of those roles include a responsible sourcing manager, a senior manager of facilities and climate change, and a new ESG marketing manager that's going to bring our sustainability, belonging, and philanthropy efforts to life for the Neiman Marcus customer very specifically. And then I would say the last thing that's really unique about how we're holding ourselves accountable is about our engagement with trade associations like the Retail Industry Leaders Association and the National Retail Federation. It's really important to note that the types of social and environmental issues that we're looking to address as a company can't be solved in isolation, right? They can't be done alone. And so we're partnering with other retail leaders to hold ourselves accountable to different issues in this space. So associates across the business participate in RILA and NRF's monthly committee meetings to share best practices on issues like climate change and responsible sourcing. They also discuss common challenges and see if there's an opportunity to pool resources to tackle some of those tough issues like removing single-use plastics from the supply chain. And in some instances, we even work with these associations to influence their positions on local, national, and international policies that directly affect our business. A great example of that right now is New York's new Fashion Sustainability Act. But some other examples that I'm really proud of most recently are Amanda Martin, our Chief Supply Chain Officer, spoke to RILA's Sustainability Committee about our progress against RILA's Climate Action Blueprint and helping other retailers understand how they can take those same steps and follow in Neiman Marcus's progress. Last Pride Month, last June, our CEO, Geoffroy, had a conversation with RILA's president about the importance of LGBTQ representation in leadership roles during Pride Month that other retailers could attend. And this month, we're actually attending the National Retail Federation Foundation Honors, where one of our associates is competing for the industry's prestigious scholarship as he works for us and finishes his college degree. So I definitely think trade associations play a key role in how we hold ourselves accountable and stay on the cutting edge of different social and environmental issues.
Yeah, that partnership with these industry trade groups, you mentioned RILA and also the NRF, you know, speaks to the level of collaboration that's needed. Obviously, retail is a super competitive space. But at the end of the day, it's obviously one world that we're all living in. So these environmental goals impact all of us. And also some of these social issues that Neiman Marcus Group is tackling, you know, don't just apply to its business. It's across the industry and it's across all of, you know, across all industries. So that level of collaboration is necessary and I guess an important part of what you're trying to do.
It is. I mean, we definitely want to be collaborative and we also want to establish thought leadership. So between those two goals, the trade associations are a great outlet to help us with our ESG strategy.
Great. Well, I think we're just about out of time for this episode. So I want to take the opportunity to thank Allie Mize, the Director of ESG Belonging and Corporate Philanthropy at Neiman Marcus Group, for joining us on today's episode and telling us a little bit about the ESG report that Neiman Marcus Group has recently released and all the initiatives in that area of the business and taking the time for joining us on today's episode. So thank you, Allie.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Thanks for listening. For more information on this podcast, please check out our podcast channel page at mytotalretail.com/podcasts for show notes. Total Retail Talks is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Make sure to subscribe on our podcast channel page as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a few moments to rate and review this podcast. Thanks, and until next time, this has been Total Retail Talks.